Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired in the Premier Networks on Sunday, August 30th, 2015. This is episode 1216. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by the new Epson Workforce Printer, powered by Precision Core. Workforce is an award-winning line of all-in-one printers for your home office, small to large business, or corporate work groups. Visit Epson.com to find out more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, MP3 players. Really? Yes, whatever. MP3 players, digital photography, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you can call us by Skype. Skype will get you in there. +1, I think, is what you do. 888-827-5536. Let's see. What's going on in the world, the magical, magical world of technology? Next week, Apple's going to announce a new iPhone. The invitations went out this week. The invitations were a little interesting, as they always are. Apple knows, or at least the invitation makers know, that those of us in the tech press, having absolutely no knowledge of what's going to happen at an Apple event, parse every line like it's something like an announcement from the Kremlin, like a May Day parade photograph. Who's standing behind Tim Cook there? In this one, they had a line in the invitation that said, "Hey Siri, give us a hint." So many of the intrepid members of the tech press, in fact, asked Siri, "Give us a hint." Let's see.
Look deep within yourself, and you will find the answer, especially on September 9th.
They updated Siri. Look deep within yourself and you will find the answer, especially on September 9th. The really interesting thing is that they're holding it at a massive venue. They haven't had it at a venue this big in my memory at all. Usually they do the iPhone announcements either at the Yerba Buena Center. The first one was at Moscone West. Yerba Buena Center holds fewer than 1,000 people. Moscone West, which is also in San Francisco, in fact, it's a block away, holds several thousand, I think 2,500. They had it at the Flint Center last year in Cupertino, California. That's where the Mac was announced in 1984. That holds, I think, I don't know, somewhere above 1,000, between 1,000 and 2,000. This time, the invitation, the Bill Graham Civic Center in San Francisco, a 7,000-seat venue. Massive. What could happen there? My colleague Christina Warren, who writes for Mashable, pointed out that the seats are removable in that venue. In fact, sometimes you'll see differing sizes, 7,000, 8,000, 6,000, and that's because you can move the seats around. There's different configurations. So some people are speculating that maybe there won't be 6,000 seats in there. There'll be 1,000 seats, as usual, and lots of room for, a car, a bunch of cars. You could do a car show in there. Maybe they're going to show an Apple car. Some people are saying, oh, no, this will be the home kit rollout because the new Apple TV is coming, we think, coming September 9th. And so they'll take some of that space to make a living room, a bedroom, a dining room. They did that once before. I remember going down to an event back when I was still invited to Apple events in Cupertino at the campus, the mothership. They had an event in there. Announcing a couple of really hot new products. One was the iPod Hi-Fi, some speakers that you plug your iPod into. The other one was iPod socks, some socks. Now, I'm not kidding either, by the way. Some socks that you would stick your iPod into. And then they invited us after the announcement, somewhat tepid announcement, they invited us upstairs. And lo and behold, they had made an entire house upstairs with the kids in their bedrooms, mom in the kitchen, of course, where else would mom be? Dad in the living room, and they all had different iPod configurations. Yeah. Mm. I suppose they could do something like that again. Are we still as excited about Apple announcements as we used to be? And I say we, I mean you, because I'm not. There's something about it that really was for a while, for about 10 years, from the early 2000s through certainly the iPad announcement, the first iPhone announcement 2007, the first iPod announcement 2001. There was this feeling of magic. It really started in 2001, where just magic is going to happen. Steve Jobs was such a brilliant communicator. And even if the product was as silly as iPod socks, you got excited. I remember him saying about the hi-fi speakers, "I'm throwing out all my high-end stereo equipment. These sound so good." And, of course, that would be nuts because they did not sound better than his high-end stereo equipment. But you believed it. When Steve said it, it was like you walked out of there going, "Oh, Apple's done it again. Socks. I didn't even know I needed socks for my iPod. They've done it again. They're brilliant." And I think a little bit of that gloss rubbed off. Of course, Steve passed 3 years ago. And, you know, some of that's just the loss of the master showman. Tim Cook, as good as he is, and I'm sure he's a wonderful CEO and a great guy, but he's not the showman that Steve Jobs was, or the marketing expert. In fact, nobody there really is the showman that Steve Jobs was. Last event Apple had, they brought they kind of made a mistake, I'll be frank. This was the introduction of Apple Music. When was this? June at WWDC? And they had a lot of announcements about the new iOS, iOS 9, which is coming out next week, and the new OS 10 El Capitan, which is coming out sometime soon. El Capitan. I like saying that. It's made of rich Corinthian leather. El Capitan. Yes. But they... Then they announced Apple Music, and they thought, well, we're going to bring in some people from the music industry. Jimmy Iovine, the world-famous, renowned record producer who was one of the founders of Beats and is an Apple employee, he came out. And the problem is Jimmy, I don't think, got the memo. I don't even know what the memo might have said. Stay away from the wacky weed. I don't know. Because Jimmy was very discursive and like, I don't know what he's talking about. And then they brought out Drake, the Toronto rapper. And he was even more bizarre. The whole thing just sank of its own weight because it lacked that showbiz feel. It's hard to recreate that unless you have that guy. In any event, we'll find out. September 9th. What's new? Not much. We think the new iPhones will have much better cameras. It's about time. They've been starting to fall behind a little bit. We think the new iPhones will have force touch screens. I'm a little skeptical. I don't know what that is going to do for me. I have force touch on comes to my MacBooks and on the watch. It's not intuitive. Doesn't really. You don't know what's going to happen when you press extra hard. Sometimes nothing happens. Sometimes something happens, and the something could be anything. And there's no consistency in that one. So I'm a little skeptical. Newer, faster processors. They do that every year. A9 processor, faster graphics. It's not like I feel like the iPod or the iPad or the iPhone are slow. They seem fast enough. They get the job done. There may be the iPhone 6S, probably S, that's what they seem to do, which will be just a little bit better of the little one, then the iPhone 6 Plus S, which will be a little bit better of the big one. And then the rumor is there might be a C, just like they did the 5C. Remember it had the color back? Because they figured out how to make it less expensive because they've been cranking these out for a year. New Apple TV, long overdue, years overdue, so that'll be interesting to see what they do. They were not, I don't think, the rumor mill says, able to make the deals they'd hoped to make. They wanted to make the Apple TV be kind of the cord cutter's dream, the box you use if you don't want to pay a cable bill, get all your television over the internet, but they couldn't get I don't think they could get those deals. Because it's all, you know, comes down to money, and I don't think they were saying... In the days when they could go to a record company and say, you're going to charge 99 cents for a single, and that's that, are gone. They don't have that clout anymore. They might announce a new iPad. I think they'll hold that off, as they usually do, till October. So look for this. It'll be interesting. I'll talk about it, you know, after it happens. It's not this week. It's September 9th, a week from Wednesday. But... bottom line, if you're in the market for a new iPhone, I would wait. Wait, you can wait 10 days. You'd probably be able to order it on the 11th and pick it up on the 18th. That's usually how they do it. 8888 Ask Leo. There you go. That's it. All the iPhone news. We'll go to the phones and talk right after this. Oh, man. I was really hopeful, too. It looked like Windows 10 was working. Don't laugh, Mr. VMware Pilot Man. Been there, done that. This is, I stupidly did the fast ring. It says, your PC ran into a problem. It needs to restart. So it's not, oh, the Mac's working, though. So I'm halfway there. And the lower thirds. And the lower thirds are working. I'm two-thirds of the way there. We're just collecting some error info. Then we'll restart for you. If you'd like to know more, you could search online for this error, page fault and non-paged area. Well, that's certainly informative. This is a clean install, though. That's what bugs me. I had the upgrade from Windows 8.1 to 10 was from a completely clean install 8.1. So my thinking is, let's burn the sucker to the ground, right? Mike B says, time to get out the USB key. See, advanced, looks like Windows didn't load correctly. You're exactly right. If you'd like to restart and try again, choose Restart My PC below. Otherwise, see advanced repair options for troubleshooting tools and advanced options. If you don't know which option is right for you, don't call us. Contact someone you trust to help with this. It doesn't say call us. Troubleshoot, use a device. I'm going to reset my PC, right? Reset this PC. Keep my files, remove everything, restore factory settings. Now, that would be A1, I think. Or would it be 10? Let's start with this one. It's less draconian. This could be the computer user's anthem. You make me want to shout. You make me want to break things. You make me want to move to an island and become a monk. 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Kim Schaffer is here. She's taking your calls, and she has prepared and groomed six wonderful people. It's kind of like a lineup. Which one should we interrogate first?
How about Leanne in West LA? She just got herself a new iPad Air 2. She had an old iPad that had a great keyboard that she could type vertically and horizontally, and she hasn't been able to find one. The same for the iPad Air 2.
Okay.
She was wondering if you had any advice.
Okay. Well, I don't need to talk to her now. No, I will. I'll pick up. Hi, Leanne. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
How are ya?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
So, I have a new iPad Air 2. And on my old iPad, I had a Logitech keyboard, and I could type vertically or horizontally. So if I wanted to do Instagram, I could do vertical or I could do horizontal. But I haven't found one for the Air 2. Do you know if there's one out there?
So how would that work? You had the Logitech keyboard. Was it that ultra-thin one that has the slot that you put the Air 2 in? It's like a stand?
Well, it wasn't an Air 2 before. It was just an old...
Or whatever, your iPad. And then you would turn the iPad... And it would,
right. It had a magnetic slot, and it came apart 100%. So every time you open the case, you put the iPad, you know, you would lean it in, and it could either go vertically or horizontal.
And it doesn't work it should work still.
Wrong size. Won't fit it.
Oh, it's the wrong size. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, so just get the new one. This is unfortunate because Apple makes them each time a little bit thinner.
Yeah, but the new one, it doesn't do that.
It doesn't?
Nope.
How do you know that?
Because I bought it.
You got it. And so you turn the iPad. Does the iPad rotate?
Yeah, no, you can't do it in there.
You can't turn the iPad anymore?
No, uh-uh. It doesn't come apart the same way. Now it clips in.
Oh, well, that's not any good. Because before you were just, it was just kind of loose in a gutter, right?
Right.
And you just turn it because it just lifted out of the gutter and turn it. Because both of them are Bluetooth. They're not connected to the lightning connector in any way, are they?
They are both. Sorry.
Are you okay?
I'm okay. That's somebody behind me honking at somebody in front of me.
Okay. You might want to pull over. I felt like we just got in a wreck there.
I don't know. I'm in the parking
scared.
Lot.
Oh, you're in a parking lot. Well, then it doesn't matter. Just stay there.
So,
this is puzzling me. So now it doesn't just sit in that gutter. They've kind of locked it in.
Right.
Well, son of a gun. Why would they do that? No, okay. Now I'm looking. Okay, wait a minute. I'm looking at, this is the one you have, the ultra-thin keyboard cover for iPad, which we've recommended. I like. Pairs via Bluetooth to the iPad. You can rotate the iPad because it rotates freely in there. Well, this is confusing.
In the Air 2?
No. See, this one says iPad 2 and 3rd and 4th gen. They've changed it somehow. Why would they change such a thing? Well, there are lots of companies that make these still. What you want, obviously, not this one, although that seems odd that they would. Maybe they felt it should be more secure in the slot or something. Is it?
Well, I looked at Fry's yesterday, and they have nothing. And I looked online, and I can't see anything that does that. And
well,
I like,
I'm going to give you one that says it does. How about that?
Okay, perfect.
And this is thank you, chat room, from Snug, S-N-U-G. I like the Snugs because unlike the, it's a little more of a case. You know, the one problem I had with the Logitech is if it's kind of a flimsy case. And maybe that's why they put clips in it, because the lid would fall, you know, the case would fall off easily. The Snug is half the price, $55. It says Snug iPad Air 2 360-degree rotatable keyboard case. So that sounds to me like it rotates.
That sounds perfect.
360-degree rotation and multi-angle adjustments to meet your visual needs. This is on Amazon. I want to see it. Let me look at the pictures. Oh, I see what they're doing. See, that isn't what you want. That is really kind of not. It rotates 360 degrees front to back. You want it to rotate from landscape mode to portrait mode, don't you?
Right. I want to be able to type.
This is confusing because the way this works, which is silly, is it rotates to face away from the keyboard. Like, why would you want that?
Yeah.
No, that's not it either, is it? Golly.
Because, you know, there's a lot of programs that you use that are only vertical.
Yeah. This is a puzzlement to me why Logitech changed it, except I can only think maybe they didn't want it to kind of fall off, which it does. The old one did. All right. This is a crazy one, but this does it because I actually have played with this one. This is from Trent, the Trent Airbender 3. It is getting nutty in here. It has an arm that goes on the back of the iPad. That lets you, but does it now? It looks like you can rotate it, but I want to see a picture of it in portrait mode. The arm goes into a case on the back of the iPad and holds it on. It says it works with the 2. It does say 360-degree spin. And it is definitely not the spin of the Snug. Why is this so hard? Why is this so hard? Now, they say my producer, Effin Dunn, is looking at the Logitech ultra-thin magnetic clip-on keyboard cover for the iPad Air 2. And it looks the same. It's still a gutter. So why can't you just rotate it in this gutter there? Now I'm puzzled. You say it's clipped in. It can't go to portrait mode.
The one I bought is clipped in, so you can, you know, if you want to use it in portrait mode, you have to fold the keyboard back, and then you can use it in portrait mode, but you can't use the keyboard.
Yeah. I'm watching a video, believe it or not, on the Amazon page for this to see if it ever. Yeah, there it is. It's in, that's portrait mode, isn't it? It's hard to tell. Nope, that's landscape mode still. All right, we're going to have to put this out to the audience because this seems like this is a no-brainer. why would Logitech change this? By the way, they've cut the price now. I'm seeing it on Amazon for $49, which is it was $100. This is the Logitech Ultra Thin Magnetic Clip-On Keyboard Cover for the iPad 2. So yours is no longer magnetic. It has a physical clip holding in place.
It is. The bottom part is still magnetic, the connection, but the little area that it connects into is not as deep, so it doesn't sit in there like the old one.
Right. Well, let me query the audience. Here's your chance to help us out. 8888 Ask Leo. It just falls out. Well, that seems poor design, does it not? I'm looking now at all of these to see if any of them show portrait mode. The VersaView 360 Shark. Here's a review. Thank you. The chat room is flying to the rescue. Although we still haven't quite solved this conundrum. This is PC Advisor UK. Best iPad cases and covers. Yeah, we're not talking about covers here, Raymond, but thank you. We're talking about keyboards. And I don't even think she cares about the case so much as being able to type in portrait mode. What's that called? Will it, it would work with anything. And would it hold an iPad in portrait mode? Says it will. Microsoft. What's it called, Microsoft? Microsoft Universal Mobile Keyboard. Thank you. This seems like an easy thing to solve, and I find it puzzling that Logitech modified it in that way. $80. Designed for iPad as well as iPhone and Windows. The problem, I think, with the Logitech one is it gets wobbly. Look, you can even use it with a phone. It gets wobbly. Let's see what Microsoft is. From the brains of Microsoft. See, it's really just a keyboard. Do you really even care if it has a stand? I don't know. I guess you do. Oh my gosh, it has a switch. But how is it in portrait mode? Does it show a picture in portrait mode anywhere? Well, this is the problem. Because the problem is it's a thinner, edge. Belkin, oh, look at the chat room's just going crazy. I want to see it doing that. I want to see it in a portrait mode and somebody typing on it. That's what I want. Yeah, we've seen this one too. No, this definitely doesn't do it because it's because of the case is attached to the keyboard. You don't want something attached to the keyboard. You could just use a stand. This is, I guess, what I would do. Is make the case, the keyboard, and the stand independent. So I have this stand. And you can, this is just a sticky pad. You can have it be any way you want. And then just have a keyboard. I think that's probably the best way to do it. That is annoying as heck, though, that Logitech changed that spec. Is it because it's so thin? All right. F and Dunn says, this one is, I have a picture. I have a picture in portrait mode. All right, let's look. This gutter will hold anything. Oh, there you go. Look, not only will it hold your iPad in portrait mode, it'll hold your iPad and a phone, but will it hold the iPad Air 2? The problem is, I think the Air 2 is so thin. This is really silly. Is that an Air 2? I am so frustrated because this last call is something so simple, so trivial, that it should be easily solved. And it's turning out to be a little bit of a challenge. So we're going to wrap this up. I'm going to flatten it right now. Leanne called. She said, hey, I used to have the Logitech Ultra Thin Piece keyboard for my iPad. on my iPad. Third generation, fourth generation work great. You could have it in portrait mode, you know, widescreen, or you could turn it sideways and have it in, that's portrait mode. The widescreen is landscape, right? Turn it to portrait mode, up and down, and it would hold, the gutter that was part of the keyboard, which worked as a stand, would hold it, and I could type. The new iPad Air 2 is so skinny, and the new Logitech keyboard for the iPad Air 2 just doesn't support it in the portrait mode, only landscape mode. Well, that's terrible. So a couple of solutions. One would be to forget making the keyboard be part of the stand. I mean, I think that's, there you go. That's part of the issue. And I just use, I use a really nice stand from Deka, D-E-K-K-E, called the Slope. And this is an amazing stand because really there's nothing to it. It's just a piece of aluminum with a sticky pad on it. And the iPad can hold in any, you could put it diagonally if you wanted. But it's completely, that's just, so get an iPad stand and then get an independent keyboard. Actually, Apple's Bluetooth keyboard's an excellent keyboard, small and light. But there are many, many Bluetooth keyboards, many less expensive Bluetooth keyboards. You don't have to have the keyboard attached to the iPad. In fact, you might prefer it that way, a little more flexible. You put the keyboard in your lap, for instance. There is a device, and you know, I'm not going to promise this works, even though, and it's from Logitech, and Logitech sells this for $50, and they do have a picture of an iPad in portrait. It's kind of an interesting device. You know what? I'm going to order one, and we'll figure this out. It's $50. It's called the Bluetooth Multi-Device Keyboard K480. And it's got a gutter that even in their videos shows holds anything, including an iPad. And it has a three-position switch, so you could use it for your phone. You could use it for your Surface, your iPad, three different devices. The question, and I don't know, and you'd probably want to go to a store and try it. Bring your iPad Air, your Air 2. And the question is, you know, I see in this, picture, in this video, an iPad standing on the short edge in portrait mode. But, you know, I don't know if it would work or not. Maybe if it's, I guess it'd have to be deep, right? What are the physics of that? I don't know. There's about 800 ways to do this. Moving on. Les in the United Kingdom. Hey, Les, how are you?
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Devon,
southwest
of England.
That's on the coast, isn't it?
It is, definitely, yes. You can, if you go straight down north, you get to Africa. That's south, sorry. You get straight down to Africa.
Just north of Africa.
Yeah, north of Africa.
What can I do for you?
Last week, a week before, you were talking about advertising on websites, and I own a website, and I am shocked and stunned on how badly AdSense is falling. And I don't know whether Google are taking more of the pie or the fact that the revenue isn't there anymore.
That's one of the problems, by the way, with Google AdSense is it's opaque. You don't know, do you? They don't tell you.
No. And I've had to go down a different route to get some sort of revenue. At the moment, I've had affiliate links put on, and but you were talking about it, that really, I think it's coming to an end, really.
I agree.
Maybe we need some more companies doing this. I've got MediaNet on there now trying to help me raise a bit of revenue from the site. But ultimately, well, how, you know, what would you suggest from someone who has got a fantastic website? I know that you do a different way, but do you suggest going down that route of affiliation with your site?
It's a really good question, very timely, Les, because there's a battle royale going on that really may change how the web works. Adweek last week had an article saying ad blocker usage is exploding. You know what an ad blocker is? Many of you probably have used one. Adblock was the first well-known one, Adblock Plus. I actually don't use those. But there's been increasing incentive to do so, and I'll tell you why in a second. But according to Adweek, ad blocking software usage is exploding. 150 million people have downloaded ad blocking software. While they say the revenue loss to the the ad industry and to the and to your sites like yours, Les, is in the billions of dollars because people aren't seeing ads anymore. So understand how this works. When you go to a website, you see a banner ad. In many, many cases, these banner ads are served by Google's AdSense. That's what Les is using. But there are other ad networks. They're automatically put on the page. Google, as you know, tries to figure out what you're interested in and put ads up there that you're interested in. That's something that bothers some people. So some people don't like being tracked. They say that's being tracked. Although I would submit that I prefer to see ads, I would think you would too, that are for something you're interested in than something you couldn't care less about. In any event, that's one problem, is that people are offended by the tracking, so they're blocking that. Ads can be very large, these inserted ads, and in many cases can slow down the site load time considerably, in some cases by a minute, not to mention the amount of bandwidth used. And on mobile, that's an especially big problem. So users are fighting back. First of all, in the first place, by the way, I need to understand how this works. In general, the way it works is Google or whoever's serving these ads tracks how many times the ad was loaded. And that's counted as an impression. Somebody saw it. Although, in fact, that's not usually the case. About half the time, nobody saw it at all. But it gets loaded. They count that as an impression, and they pay you a certain amount of money per impression. There's also a kind of ad that's a little bit more expensive, cost per click. You get paid by the number of people who click the ad. There's also, a bit of an attrition going on, because I don't know about you, but I don't really see those banner ads anymore. There's so many, and they're so scattered throughout the page that I just kind of skim over them, and I probably don't see them, which has caused ad creators to make them more annoying. They put flash in there. They jump around. Remember the punch the monkey? Oh, it's so much worse than that. They're doing so much more. So people are blocking these, frankly. They're using their software you can put on your browser. And Apple has announced that in the next version of the iPhone operating system, iOS 9, they're going to allow those blockers on mobile Safari as well. And what happens, you just don't see them. End users love this because the page loads faster. They don't see all the cruft, the jumping monkeys and stuff. And it reduces the bandwidth usage. So there's, from an end user's point of view, there's no, why not? But remember, here's Les saying, well, this is how I pay for my page. And if you're talking about a big blog, a journalistic enterprise with lots of staff, a lot of writers doing a lot of research, that's expensive. The servers are expensive, the bandwidth is expensive, the employees are expensive, and the way they get paid is through those ads. So what's happening, and we're starting to see it already, is sites are starting to fold because they're not making the money they used to. Less, it may be that Google's giving you a smaller cut, but more likely what's happening is fewer of your users are seeing those ads as ad blocker usage jumps, went up 41% last year. And it's a really interesting challenge facing the industry. I'll talk a little bit more about that. But first, let's take a break for an ad. Don't skip this. No skipping. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, this would be a good time to talk about Epson printers. Wouldn't it? The Epson Workforce printer. Love the printer. We do a lot of ads for Epson, and I don't, on the radio show, get to really talk about how cool Epson is, because they don't, we don't want to get too geeky talking about this precision core. But if you go to Epson.com, learn a little bit more about Precision Core. I think you'll be kind of impressed. This is technology that came to Epson from their industrial high-end printers, and it is just amazing. It's kind of mind-boggling. These new Precision Core printheads give you better printouts than laser. They can fire 40 million dots per second. In perfectly precision fashion. I mean, this is a MEMS solution, the micromechanical machines. These are basically nanobots. They are so tiny, 40 million dots per second. So what this means is it prints lightning fast. I mean, my new Workforce, I replaced all my Epson printers with the new Workforce series. They print, it's like they print a page at a time. You don't hear the, how in the older printers, as it prints, No. The whole page comes out. This is so fast. The quality is astounding. Print shop quality. Vibrant colors. The text is super clear and crisp. Read this PDF on Precision Core. I think it will blow you away. To me, it's mind-boggling what they have done here. 720 nozzles per inch. I mean, it's incredible. The drop size, 1.5 picoliters. That's like nothing. And I should say that the 1.5 picoliters is the smallest drop, but they are multi-size drops, which is also kind of cool. So they size the drop based on the need. It's really amazing. So take a look at it. You don't really need to know the numbers to be able to see the benefit. By the way, unlike laser printers, no warm-up time. You can print on a wide variety of media. I use it to print on stickers and stuff. They're energy efficient. You can cut costs because they cost about half the price per page of a color laser printer. But you don't compromise quality. And fast. Just amazing. Go to Epson.com and find out what the new workforce printers can do for you and your business. EPSON.com. And if you're a geek like me, read up on how they're doing this. Incredible. Epson's MEMS manufacturing techniques. Micro electromechanical machines. Basically nanobots. And you can see, I mean, the quality is incredible. Epson, built to perform. So Steve Gibson on Tuesday is going to talk about an ad blocker called uBlock Origin, which is quite... I'm on Adweek's site. On this page, it's blocked... Wait a minute. Is this on this page alone? It blocked 26 requests. So you can see what the requests are. You could turn it off or on. You can even see what the different things are. But you notice there are no ads on this page. And that's because of this. If I turn it off and reload the page, there'll be more ads. So he's going to review this and talk about it. It's, among ad blockers, I would say this is the most effective, the simplest. But there's an ethical concern, which we'll talk about. I'll show you twit.tv. We have banner ads on here, which you're not seeing. Three requests on this page. So it blocks some JavaScript too. So it blocks analytics as well. Our page is pretty lightweight. There's an ad there, one little thin bar and one bar at the bottom. But it also blocks analytics. So that is an even bigger problem because I don't even know how many people have visited my site. Anybody who's using an ad blocker is invisible to us. So it's really, it's an interesting challenge. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. I mean, hi there. Let's get a few basic things out of the way. I guess I've rebuilt my, you know what? This looks like it's Windows 8 now. I hope not. Here's the legal stuff. Yeah, thank you. No, I guess it's 10. Let's go to work. Okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Your questions, your comments, your suggestions. Les raised, opened a can of worms on the show just a minute ago talking about ad blockers. He runs a website and he notices his revenues are dropping dramatically from Google Ads. And he's wondering why. He doesn't know why because you can't tell. But I would guess that some of this is because of ad blockers. And people are blocking ads on websites. Look, I'm going to be very honest and I'm going to try to be fair about this. I work in ad-supported media. For my whole life, it's been advertising that's paid my bills, paid my salary for the last 40 years. I've never had to charge for anything I do. So I appreciate ad-supported media because I think it gives you... If done properly, it can be not too annoying, and it gives you great content. And it's fundamentally democratic because it doesn't worry about whether you can pay for the content. It's yours free. And radio and television for years were supported that way. The web has traditionally because it's hard to make a paywall has been done this way as well. You can set up a paywall. Wall Street Journal, for instance, does this. You go to the Wall Street Journal, and if you want to read all their articles, most newspapers let you read a number of articles. New York Times, Washington Post let you read, I think, 10 a month, and then you have to pay. That's a paywall. And it's one way to handle this, but it's expensive. And I don't think people want to pay for a lot of sites. I think we're used to the idea that media should be mostly free, so the ads have to pay for it. There are all sorts of issues here. On the other hand, I completely understand somebody wants to use an ad blocker because these ads slow down your site. They're gathering information about you. Some people are concerned about privacy. And in the worst case, they can even spread malware. This has happened many times because these ad systems are automated. A bad guy can buy an ad with some flash in it and inject malware into that flash. And if you've patched your system, you'll be all right. But if you haven't, you could be vulnerable. Another really good reason to block ads. So there's a lot of blame on both sides. I can't say I'm blameless on this. I confess I will TiVo a TV show and skip the ads. I do that. I do that. Who doesn't do that? So we've got to figure out a way to solve this, because what we don't want to lose is ad-supported media, especially, I think, on the web. There's so many great blogs and websites and news sources that are fully ad-supported, and they'll just go away. On the other hand, there's a lot of burden on advertisers to knock it off. But it's a vicious circle, because as we stop seeing the ads, they have to get more intrusive, invasive. They have to figure out ways. Remember when pop-ups and then pop-unders were a problem? Pop-ups became a real problem on the web, an ad that would pop up. So browsers responded to this. They put pop-up blockers in. And nobody complained because pop-ups were very annoying. So the advertisers said, well, let's do pop-unders. You remember those X10 ads? You'd go to a website and you'd be browsing the website and then you'd close the page and there's an ad? Those are pop-unders. That was another way to kind of sneakily get an ad in there. What I fear is that you're going to get something called native content. Advertisers understanding that you're not seeing banner ads. This is happening all over, not just on the web, but in television and radio as well. Are going to start buying advertorial. They'll start their Forbes. You wouldn't think Forbes would do anything like this. It's a esteemed magazine and a website. But they, in fact, do sell advertorial. And it looks just like Forbes content, but it's paid. It's an ad, but you can't really tell. They might have a little subtle indicator that it's an ad, but they try to hide that. Because essentially the trick is to convince people that they're reading editorial content, not an ad. It's why the judges on American Idol have big glasses of Coca-Cola in front of them. I don't know what's in that glass, but it says Coca-Cola on that. That's an ad. And it's an ad that's not easily blocked by skipping the ads on your TiVo. You're going to see more and more of that. You may not bother you, but what you get is this kind of seesaw battle between advertisers and people who don't want to see ads. I think there's an ethical issue here too. You shouldn't, if you're not paying for a website by looking at the ads, it's kind of unethical to use the website, isn't it? Or is it? 8888 Ask Leo. So Les, I think you're in a conundrum that you're not alone in. I think almost everybody who puts content on the web that's paid for by banner advertising is facing dwindling revenues, users increasingly blocking ads. There's other side effects. When you block ads, you also block often JavaScript, which means I can't count you. I don't know how many people have visited my website, or I have a low count because I can't count people who are blocking. It is a real challenge we're facing right now, and I think we're going to see a very big change in the way things work. But I don't know what the final answer will be. Let's do an ad. When we come back, Joe and Van. I feel like my hope is that we try to do ads that are relevant to you, that are something you'd be interested in. We try to do them in an entertaining and interesting way so that you listen, because we know everybody in the broadcasting. Now, radio has a little bit of advantage because people usually can't skip the ads in the car. You're listening, you're stuck. We gotcha. But television, it's a real problem. The networks are very scared. To Van Nuys we go. Hello, Joe.
Yes. Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Okay. Real quick, fast questions. This program, Handbrake, is it going to be compatible with the Windows 7 Professional? That's what I'm asking.
Handbrake's great. It's from H. It's brake like a brake in a car. HANDBRAKE.FR. Comes from France.
Okay.
It's free. Never pay for it. And don't download it from somewhere like download.com where you might get other adware with it. Go to handbrake.fr and download it. It works on Windows and Mac. HANDBRAKE.FR. It is safe. It is effective. What it does is it takes it's a DVD ripper. So it'll take video and or a transcoder. So it'll take video from any source, including a DVD, convert it to a file format you can play back on your computer or your mobile device. And it has a lot of presets for a variety of mobile devices. Now, when you download it, they'll tell you, no, we cannot rip commercial DVDs. They're copy protected. But then they'll also tell you, you know, if you had Videoland, another French product, those French, they're clever. From videoland.org. If you had VLC, you know, which is a DVD player, if you had that installed, then we'd be able to rip a DVD too. So it can be used for piracy. I'm not advocating illegal behavior, but
no,
I do
believe that.
No, I believe you have the right to make a copy of something you bought. So if you buy a DVD, you should make a copy. You should make a backup. We're just talking about backup. And the Handbrake is a great way to do it. It also means you don't have to bring the DVD with you if you have it on your computer.
Yeah.
And it'll get a standard movie down about a gigabyte very easily.
What I'm thinking is that, you know, in case anything gets damaged or fire or anything, I have 400 movies, you know, DVDs that I bought.
You bought them.
I'm thinking about saving them.
As long
them
as you don't put them up on the BitTorrent sites or give them to friends.
Yeah.
There's nothing unethical or wrong about that. That is completely legitimate. You're making an archival backup of the DVD.
Okay, so how many of these 400 can I save? Should I get a 2 terabyte?
If you had a 2 terabyte drive, you could get a terabyte would be enough to get them all on there. Yeah. Now generally you're not preserving the menu structure, the behind the scenes, the director's commentary. You're just getting the movie, but and you can say how big that file will be. But generally, it's about a gigabyte an hour. So a terabyte would be enough to hold the whole thing. Maybe 2. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now we're going to listen to some commercials. How about that? See, that's why I think podcast commercials work. Because people listen to them and they want to support. You got to create a relationship with the audience. And these websites, they don't have a... It's like, you're assaulting me. Stop assaulting me. And so I think if they were more intelligent about how they did it, it would be better. But I think we're also in a bad situation there. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers or the internet or home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, call via Skype. Shouldn't cost you anything. Ron's in Laguna Niguel, our next caller. Hi, Ron.
Hi. I called you a few weeks ago about Picasa.
Yeah.
Google Picasa, and I'm still having trouble.
It wasn't working with Windows 10, as I remember.
Yeah, and now I went back to Windows 7, but it's still having problems. But I was having a lot of trouble with Windows 10. I was really getting a lot of bugs in it, so I went back to 7.
That's fair enough. You know, I think Microsoft's going to do a big update in October that will be, in my opinion, the real version of Windows 10 that they intended to release at first.
Well, I'm not going back to 10 at all.
Okay.
I'm keeping 7.
Fair enough. So, Windows 7 will be around for a long time.
All right. So with this Google Picasa, you think and another, are the viewing audience, you getting any reports in? Or
no.
I know that.
People love it. I use it. A lot of people use it. You know, a lot of times what will happen is there'll be something about your system. And Windows systems are very heterogeneous. There are lots of different ways. I mean, there's hardware, there's software. Everyone is unique. I mean, really, everyone is unique. They're all little special snowflakes. And the problem is that the way your system is obviously causing problems with Picasa. So you're asking the right question. Well, is this a general problem or is this a specific problem? And I know a lot of people use Picasa. I myself use Picasa without any problem. So it is probably something specific to your setup, which makes it very hard for me. In fact, there's nothing I can really do to diagnose it. I can point you in different directions. We can give you the generic advice, uninstall and reinstall. But Cost is a free program, so you're not going to get a lot of support out of Google. It may be, in fact, that, and this is always a problem with Google, it may be, in fact, that they have stopped working on it. We don't know because they don't tell you this. But what we do know is they have a new app called Photos that's on Android and iOS that they have moved the photo capability out of their big social network, Google Plus. And increasingly, it looks like Google Plus is headed for the boneyard. It may be that Picasa's in the same boat. They did migrate Picasa Web to their new Photos system. But they're not, they haven't said anything. So you may start looking for an alternative to Picasa. Picasa's great because it's free. It does so many nice things. I really like the Google Photos app on mobile. And if you're on a desktop computer, there are other alternatives. It depends what you use Picasa for. Most people use it to organize their photos, and it's very good at that. They also use it to do some mild editing, red eye removal, things like that. Somebody in the chat room is recommending the open source clone of Adobe Lightroom. It's called LightZone. It's in early days yet, but I think that's promising. I'll tell you what, let's compile. Chat room, you could help me out here, and anybody listening too. Let's compile a list of Picasa alternatives and see if we could put that in our website, techguylabs.com. I'll also point you to a good site to know about called Alternatives 2. It's alternative2.net. And what you do on Alternative 2 is you enter in the program you're looking for an alternative to. So I'm going to enter in Picasa, and then it'll show us a list of alternatives that do some or all of the same things. Some are free, some are not, some are Mac, some are Windows. You'll probably want to pick Windows 7 and according to Alternative 2, there are 75 alternatives to Windows. Some are expensive. Lightroom, for instance, $200. Some are not, like AC/DC, which is a free shareware program. Windows Live Photo Gallery. I'm not sure what I'd recommend as an alternative in this list. I'll have to go through a bunch of these. But we have people in the chat room who are using alternatives who will recommend it. And we'll put it in the show notes at techguylabs.com. There's your assignment, chat room. I think Google Photos is so good, even if you just use the web version. The problem is most people are using Picasa. Are using it as a way to organize. So you put in folders, you put information. Say, here's our pictures from our trip to Mallorca. Here's all, you know, and that organizational stuff is really the main reason I think people use Picasa. What's an alternative? Is there a free alternative? That's probably the best free program out there. I've recommended it for years. There are older versions of Picasa out there. Web 007's telling me you might want to go to oldapps.com and download a previous version of Picasa, one intended for Windows 7. Maybe that'll work better for you. That's a great question, and I don't really have an answer for you. I think probably time to look for an alternative. Google hasn't said they're discontinuing Picasa, but if you read the tea leaves, they sure feel like they're moving to something else. Frank in Michigan. Hi, Frank. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Glad to be able to talk to you on the phone.
Nice to talk to you. Welcome.
I actually went to your show on Sunday a few weeks back and got to say hi to you. But anyway, I was really sad when you got your pen stuck backwards. Note 5.
You were sad. I was sad. Yeah. And if you saw me do that, I did it on our show Mac Break Weekly, which has video.
Yes.
So you can go to YouTube and see that. Just look for, you know, Mac Break Weekly Pengazi. That's what we're calling it. It's really kind of a sad thing. I love this Note 5. It's one of the best phones I've ever used, brand new from Samsung. And I wasn't the first to observe this. I think Phil Nickenson of Android Central was the first, that the pen can go in either direction. Now, the stylus is what makes the note really interesting. You can draw on the screen. You can take notes. But you pop there's a newly designed pen that pops out. If you're not paying attention and you just slide it in, it doesn't take anything to put it in. There's no force involved. It happens with gravity. But the problem is, the first time you do that, you won't be able to remove it. because there's a little tiny lever that grabs it. And when you finally do get it out, it breaks the lever and breaks the pen sensing capability of the phone permanently.
Okay. Okay, I have a Note 3, and I've been looking at the Note 5, but I decided I didn't want to buy it because of this problem.
Well, just don't put it in wrong. That's Samsung's response, by the way.
Grandkid comes over.
Well, right. Or it's dark.
Or some guests are looking at the thing, and they just stick it in there.
It's very easy to do it wrong. Now, let me say this. I pulled it out, and it broke that lever. I don't have the sensing thing. There's really only two features that are now lost. One I really liked, which was that while the phone is off, I used to be able to pop the pen. You just push the pen in and it pops out. And it would put the phone into this interesting mode where you could draw on the darkened screen. You could take notes without turning the phone on. In fact, it was just turning on the phone, leaving the screen dark, and you were taking notes. And then you'd save it to the note. You can't do that anymore. And it also seems to have broken, I think, a somewhat more important feature, which is if you leave the pen behind, if you take the pen out and you walk away with your phone, the phone will alert you to that. That doesn't seem, I don't know why, but that doesn't seem to work anymore. However, I went to the settings, turned those off. The upside is I get a little more battery. And the most important part about the pen is it still works. It doesn't automatically sense that I've removed it, but if I hover it and press the button or I tap the pen application, I still get all the pen functionality that I used to get. So it's not like it's all gone. It's just that one little thing is gone. And the phone is so good. I mean, I had the Note 3. I had the Note 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I've always loved this phone, but Samsung's made it better each time. Best screen I've ever used. Best camera I've ever used on a phone. Better than the iPhone, I think. And the pen works better than it's ever worked before. Very little latency. It is a little, you know, it's an engineering flaw. I think Samsung will fix it. I do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, there's a, you know, Burke suggested this. He knew how I could fix it, but I wanted to bring it to AT&T to see what they would do, which was exactly nothing. I thought maybe they'd give me a new phone. No. They said, you know, you can give the phone back and get a refund. Anybody can do that if you don't like the phone for the first 2 weeks and it's only a week old. They said, we won't fix it, and you know, we don't have any repair facilities here. You could send it to Samsung. Maybe they'd fix it. But there is a fix. And Burke, who's a brilliant repair guy, said, you know, just put a straw around it, push the straw up, and then you could pull it out. And that is, in fact, the fix. You can, because the lever is on this side. And so if you can find something you can slide in, and there's plenty of room, I could have shimmed it out. Okay, right, for 2 weeks. No Chris today, Nathan. No photo guy. Anyway, it's not the... It really, truly isn't in the end of the world. But it's poor design. There's no question about it. Shouldn't be able to do that. And you don't have to... See, my problem was I thought, at some point I'll get some resistance. And that I won't push it past that point because that's when I'm going to break it. But there's no resistance. Gravity is enough. And at that point, I pull it out and it would stick. I could actually hold the phone up. So, and anything that you do, and I never pulled on it hard. I just worked it until it kind of came out and it broke it. Anything, because it's just the tiniest little plastic nubby. You can get your money back only if you say, I reject this phone. You can't get your money back because they'll only take it back if it's fully functional and you say, no, you know, I decided I want to stick with my old phone. They don't swap the phone. Oh, why does it catch it? Because there's a little lip on it. You can barely see it. Actually, I think what catches it is this button, this clicker button. So the pen is smooth except for two things. Here there's a notch and this. But I think if you put it in backwards, it's probably this that's catching on it. Well, I'm going to get another phone because I always have another. I'm going to get an iPhone in 2 weeks and I'm going to get a Moto X in a week. And But this phone is really good. So I kind of am not anxious to give it up. Yeah, could have easily have been fixed. And they knew about it because, you know, their response was, we'll read the manual. Doesn't come with a manual, incidentally. I'm sure the new ones come with a big warning. Don't put your pen in wrong. The manual's online. You have to read a PDF. But in the but that's a smoking gun, because in the manual it says, do not insert your pen the wrong way. It will break the phone. So they knew it. No, you can't return the Note 5 and get a refund and get another Note 5 from AT&T, because they say the only way you can return the Note 5 is if you choose not to have a Note 5. You know what? Your customer said, oh, I don't like the Note 5. Could have been fixed. And it will be fixed. I predict that future versions of the Note 5 will come with something to prevent that. Yeah, I think if I had went to the Apple store with an iPhone that had a problem like that, they would say, oh, yeah, sorry, and give me a new one. But that's Apple. Oh, Samsung knows, believe me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Yeah, this was sad. Slight damage. Note 5 mostly works. Slightly damaged. But I like it so much, I don't want to give it up. I'm only, you know, I'm less than 2 weeks into it. I could say to AT&T, I could bring it back and say, I don't like this, and go back to whatever it was I was using before. But I don't want to. I like it. I like it. So I would say this is, I like the Note 5. Highly recommend it. If you're worried about the stylus, they make a virtually identical phone called the Galaxy S6 Plus. Or I guess it's the Edge Plus. That's the same size, same screen, same camera. It just doesn't have a stylus. So you can always get it without a stylus. But I like the stylus. So I'm just going to keep it. It's fine with me. I mean, that little lever doesn't work. That's all. John in Arizona, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Okay.
If you turn off the radio, it'll be a little less confusing.
Whoops.
Because there is a delay. There's about a 40-second delay.
Yes, and it wasn't the radio. I've had a heck of a time finding out what time zone you're in.
We're in the Pacific time zone. The show is air. I do it live. You may not hear it live on your local stations, but I do it live Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific time.
And I found that all out yesterday, and as a result, it's a delayed broadcast here. And
yeah, that's not unusual.
And if I dial in, I get nothing but a busy signal.
Sorry about that.
No longer on the air.
Sorry about that. We should run some an announcement that says, Leo's not live right now, but if you'd like to call, Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 2 Pacific time.
I hope you're really alive if you're not live right now.
I am live right now.
Okay.
But here's the problem. You can ask a question, but you won't get the answer till your station airs it later.
Oh, no, I'm listening to you live.
I know. I'm just teasing you.
Oh, okay.
That's a very poor joke on my part. What can I do?
Well, it was done not quite as poor as mine.
What can I do for you, John?
I've gotten these phone calls over in 18 month period, periodically, and it's almost like the person calling, I know I'm almost positive it's a scam, but it's almost like the person calling knows when my computer is running, because there's been several times when I turn it on and maybe 15, 20 minutes later is when I get this phone call.
That's just a coincidence. And what do they say on the phone call?
Okay, the guy is very broken language and hard to understand. But
he says he's calling from Microsoft, I bet.
No, he says he's calling. It started out originally in the early calls that I'm calling. I work for the Windows company.
No, that's even worse. That's even more of a. You know that company that makes Windows? I work for them. I can't remember the name right now.
Like Anderson Windows or something.
Yeah, right.
In your house.
Yeah. No, these are scammers. So let me tell you, in fact, one of the things that makes this kind of credible is that oftentimes these are guys who are working in a call center, sometimes in China, India, Canada, all over the world in these call centers. And in, during the day, they're actually helping people on an actual Microsoft helpline. But during their down times or at night, they're being told, now, here's a bunch of numbers. Call these numbers and say you're calling from Microsoft or the Windows company. And I can tell you what he said. We've noticed some unusual activity on your computer. We believe you have a virus. Would you mind... I would like to help you. Would you mind doing a couple of things on your computer so that I can tell you what's going on? And what they'll do is they'll have you run a program that's on every Windows PC called the Event Viewer. The Event Viewer really looks at a log that's being constantly made of things that have happened on your computer. And it is completely normal that some of the events in the Event Viewer have big red X's or yellow triangles or exclamation marks because something didn't work or failed. But that's normal. But they'll say, oh, do you see any red exclamation marks or red X's? And you'll say, oh, my goodness. Yes, I do. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. I believe you are infected. We'd like to help. Now, here's how the scam can go. There's a fork in the road. Sometimes they'll just ask, no, we're nice people. We're Microsoft. We'll do this for free. Just give me access to your computer. But lately, the scam's gotten more sophisticated. They'll say, well, give me a credit card. I'll charge you $300 and we'll fix this right here, right now. And then they get access to your computer. So now that's really a better scam because they've got a credit card. They've got $300. And during the time when they had access to your computer, they might have put some other stuff on there. It'll give them access to your computer anytime they want. So this is not a real call. Microsoft will never call you at home or the Windows company.
Well, I was most sure of that.
Yeah, you knew that. Yeah,
coincidentally, or
it's, you know what, they call so much that it just coincidental. It was after you turned the computer on. You turn it on every day, don't you?
Well, most of the time, yeah. But generally, it's more towards the evening.
Yeah, it's just these guys. You know, it's just coincidental. They're not targeting you particularly. Although it's sad that you're getting so many of them.
Now, one more point on this. The last call I received, which was two, three, maybe 4 weeks ago, sounded like the same guy. First time he called from Albany, the second time he said
he says, my name's Joe,
no,
Harry.
I can understand his name.
Yeah.
But last time was from Los Angeles. I asked him, what company do you... The way he questioned is, have you noticed your computer is slowing down? And
whose isn't slowing down? Let me ask you. Find one that's not.
Well, I've been getting some blue screens lately, sure. But they're easy to come back out of for me so far.
So,
however, this last time, I asked him, what company do you work for? And I asked where he was. He said, Los Angeles. Then what company do you work for? And he said, Solutions for All.
Oh.
That turns out that is the name.
That is a legitimate company. I've spoken to them before.
Industries. And I said, what's your phone number? And I got that.
Yeah, and you called him back?
No, I did not because I did not want to give to him.
Right.
The fact that I was.
You were right. This one is less than of a scam, although no one should be calling you directly, period.
Right.
Period. But that is cold calling from a company that does sell a somewhat legitimate service. I've talked to these guys before. This is not the first time somebody's called and asked about them. And they just shouldn't be doing this. That's not how you get business. You don't cold call people and say, how's your computer running? Even if it's a legitimate service you're offering, I don't think that's the way to do it. That's how they're doing their business. It's not illegal to do so. Anybody who's legit, you did the right thing. If you feel like, well, maybe this is legit, get a phone number, call them back, make sure that, because now you have some information about them. But it's very easy to lie and spoof. You can even spoof the caller ID hardware on the phone system to make it look like you're calling from a Los Angeles number. I have a blanket policy. I don't give money to solicitors on the phone. I don't do business with solicitors on the phone. I don't want incoming phone calls from people selling stuff. So I just say, no, you should do the same. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Give to one political campaign once 5 years ago, and I will never hear the end of it.
The Windows company, is that anything like the paper company?
Yeah, calling from the paper company. I am calling from the fruit company.
Would you? Your computer, is it slowing down?
Yes.
Oh, dear. Tell me, do you see X's?
It has gotten worse over time. It's terrible. Just don't take incoming phone calls, you know? Just don't. I can't think of it. The only time I've ever, the incoming phone calls have not been a scam. It's when my credit card company calls and says, here's fraudulent activity on your account. And in which case I say, good, I didn't do that. And then, but I never give them information. They just say, did you just buy a pair of sneakers in, you know, in New Delhi? And I say, no. And they say, okay. And that's all there is. I don't answer the phone anymore. I hate answering the phone. I don't want to talk to anybody. But I get a lot. I do now, of course, I'm getting all the political solicitors. I'm calling from the Democratic National Committee. No! No! And that's another one, Battlecam. Battlecam's mom got a pop-up that wouldn't go away. It says, your computer is infected. Call this number. That's another, and that's a scam, too. That's just a JavaScript pop-up, or maybe, in worst cases, a browser hijacker object. I've been using, and I think it's okay, a thing called Truecaller. Have you used this before? Facebook has a similar program. Truecaller is kind of a caller ID system that seems to be using kind of group calling stuff. You identify, if you get a call, you identify them. And it does a pretty good job of identifying people, not just from your contact list, but from their own kind of group thing. And then you can say that was a spam call, and then it will start get, if you know, it tells you when the phone rings. 95 people said this was a spam call. It's a free service. I think this is okay. I haven't recommended it because I'm, you know, I don't know. But I think this is okay. And I haven't paid for it. They have True Messenger and True Dialer. They have a whole set suite of tools. So you can, you have common spammers, block them or not. Hidden numbers, you can block any number that says unknown. Block spam SMS. Automatic rejection of calls. It's pretty cool. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Somebody just sent me a SoundCloud link. You know what SoundCloud is? It's great. It's a great website where people can put music, sounds, all sorts of stuff. Some people use it for their podcasts. It's a whole bunch of tech support scam calls. Oh, my, my. I guess people record these for their amusement and mess with the guy. These guys will get pretty angry with you if you mess with them. As if, you know, somehow you've done something wrong. I would just hang up. I just say, you know what? Thank you for your call. Please put me on. I always say this, even though it's futile. Please put me on your do not call list. And then I hang up. If they're legitimate, that actually is supposed to work, right? They're required by federal U.S. law to put you on a list and not call you back. Unfortunately, most of these aren't legitimate. So you get called again and again and again. Cameron, Virginia, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Cameron.
Hello.
Hello. What can I do for you?
You give us some good information of the internet.
Okay. What can I do to help you here?
These new 5K IMAX.
Yeah.
Is it good to max out the RAM or just to go get the 8 gigabytes?
That's actually a great question. I have a 5K. I have two 5K iMacs, one for my wife and one for me. I got one for her first. Then I got so jealous, I had to get one for myself. I think they're great computers. Not cheap, but the best-looking display I've ever seen. And if you can afford a 5K iMac, it's going to give you really incredible performance. They start at $2,000, which now, I remember, I'm an old guy, the days when the computer you wanted was always about $2,500. But nowadays, a computer for $2,000, that's a lot of money. They're all-in-ones. They have a super high-resolution display, and Apple does some really clever stuff with high-res displays so that it doesn't make the icons and the menus really tiny. They double those up. So you only get that resolution on film or pictures, but that's what you want. If you're doing video editing or photo editing, there's nothing better. So because it's an iMac, it's an all-in-one, it's kind of hard to get into it. You can get into it, and actually adding memory, I think, as I remember, is one of the few things you can do. I'll have to look at mine, a little port on the back that you can add memory. But generally, I tell people, get the memory you can afford, because it's even if you can add memory easily after the fact, it's a lot easier just to add it. The base model, the $2,000 model, as you say, comes with 8 gigabytes. I think for most people on a Macintosh, that's fine. Unless, and a lot of people are doing this, you're doing photo editing, especially if you're using Photoshop, which is a memory hog, or video editing. Or you could just be one of those people that keeps a lot of tabs open and you need more memory. In which case, 16 or even 32 is useful. If you're a photographer and you use Photoshop all the time, get the most. This is your tool for your business. Get the most memory you can afford. 32 wouldn't be too much. If you're just a normal everyday user, you surf the net, you open emails, you browse, you do a little photo retouching, 8's plenty. Get the base unit. Apple is pretty good about their base models, at least on the Macintosh line. The base models are all functional, even with the minimal processor spec and the minimal RAM spec. They don't do what a lot of companies do, which is give you kind of a loss leader, a really cheap one that nobody wants, and then bump you up to the next level. They do that on the phone, I should point out. I baffled that for a long time they sold phones with 8 gigabytes of storage. Phones that had so little storage, iPhones that have so little storage, they couldn't be updated because there wasn't enough free space to update them. Apparently, the next iPhone will start at 16 gigabytes. That's still too small nowadays. So they do that, and that's so that they can give you that starts at $650. So with the iPhone, I always do bump the storage up, not RAM. You can't change the RAM on the iPhone. On the Mac, I think the base models in most cases are fine unless you have special needs. You know, you do something that takes a lot of memory. 8 gigs is a lot of memory. Elliot in Boston, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Elliot.
Hello.
How are you, Elliot?
Good.
Good. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Well, I was just wondering if there was because I was looking for a camera for the family.
Yeah.
Like a nice one, because I take a lot of, nobody else would use it.
Are you the photographer in the family?
Yes.
Nice. How old are you, Elliot?
I'm 12. I'm the guy who called like a week ago.
Yeah, I remember you, Elliot. Yeah, I remember you. Okay. So you want a camera, but mom and dad aren't going to be using it. It's mostly going to be for you. But as I remember, your mom and dad are pretty supportive of your geek habits.
Yes.
Yes. They like this idea. They want a Bill Gates to support them in their old age.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they see this as an investment.
Yeah, she says that. Yeah.
I love that.
Around like the $500-$800.
Oh, that's a lot.
A good camera, but not like the best, like a DSLR. Like,
yeah. You want a point and shoot. Like, you want a point and shoot, right, Elliot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can give you like good quality and a little bit of control over it.
Sony RX100.
Okay.
And I had the Mark II. I think they're up to Mark IV now. They keep improving it. Now, you can get the previous edition for less, about $500. And I think the current one is $800. But this is the best point-and-shoot made out there right now. It is incredible. In low light, it has a one-inch sensor. One of the things about point-and-shoots that makes them less good than a more expensive camera is they tend to use small sensors. You know, on your camera phone, the sensor is like an eighth of an inch. It's teensy-weensy. It's a little bit bigger on a compact, you know, like a Canon compact ELF. But it's still a quarter of an inch. Sony makes the biggest point-and-shoot sensors I know of, 1 inches. And that 1-inch sensor means everything's going to look better. It's going to do better in low light and all of that. So Elliot, I guess his phone failed on him, but I really like the RX100. And just get the version, you know, whether it's the Mark III or the Mark IV that you can afford. There are excellent other options out there. You know, the next step up is interchangeable lenses with slightly bigger sensors. But the prices can start going pretty high. So in that price range, I think you'd be very happy with the RX100. And it's also very compact, you know, in that, since you're going to be the family photographer. By the way, great video too. And that's something to consider nowadays. You don't need a separate camcorder anymore. That's because every still camera out there takes high def, super high quality video. The Canon G7X, that's a newer version of the Canon point and shoot, also has a 1-inch sensor. So that'd be another good choice. I like Canon stuff. Right now, I think Sony is doing the best sensors, the best stuff out there. I'm just blown away by the quality. And then when you get in high school, then you can get a Micro Four Thirds interchangeable lens camera and start really getting more serious. It's a lot easier not to have to bring extra lenses around, right? 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. The things I mentioned, the products, the websites, the diatribes I go on, they're all listed on the website, techguylabs.com. No charge to enter. We do not want your email address. We don't make you sign up for anything. It's just all there. Not only show by show, day by day, but hour by hour, caller by caller. And you can even add your comments and thoughts. So if you hear me and you start yelling at the radio, you don't have to be frustrated. You will be heard. Just go to the website, put your comments in there. We really appreciate that. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Reset your Dell XPS, please. Why do you say that? Okay. I am resetting my Dell XPS. I do have Windows 10 on my Mac, too, so. Hi, I'm Cortana. Hi, Cortana. I'm here to help you make life easier. Okay, Cortana. I'll be sharing everything you do and know with the Microsoft Corporation. Is that okay? Sure. Hello. Oh, no. Oh, crap. Did you see that? Big error. I think this is maybe some hardware failed. This won't take long. Liar. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Cycle the colors. Like, that makes me think you're doing something. How many years have you spent looking at this screen, right? Way too many years.
The color thing is my favorite thing.
Yeah. It must be working. Yeah. Atari 800 used to have color cycling built into the hardware. It didn't have to do any thinking. I love this machine, but I've seen this way too often. This won't take long, but mostly because we're doing new operating systems now and everything. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That was kind of, that's chutzpah. That's a little bit of gall. Samsung, you know, when you tell Samsung, hey, when your pen goes in backwards, it breaks the sensor. Their response to that was, well, it says not to do that in the manual. Read the manual. It says not to do that. But the manual doesn't come with the phone. You have to go online and search for the manual and then get it in a PDF. And there it very clearly says that. But how many people do that? Well, I better not touch this phone until I read the manual. What comes with the phone is a pamphlet that says, have a great time. Here's 15 products you might want to buy. Peter, Brooklyn, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
Good, buddy. Thank you. I have a question. I have the Note 5. Okay. And also...
You haven't stuck the pen in wrong, have you?
No, thanks to you on MacBook Wizard, I didn't.
Did you laugh out loud when you saw me do that?
I felt bad. No, when you couldn't get it out, I felt bad. Oh, man.
It was like you can see the video because we do video of the show, and you can see me visibly like shocked. Like, oh, it did it.
Yeah. And I'm surprised they didn't help you at AT&T.
I didn't expect them to help me. Truthfully, I kind of knew that they would say, well, you put it in wrong. It's your fault. You shouldn't put it in upside down. So don't put it in upside down. But do you like the phone?
I do. I actually like it a lot.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, Leo, my girlfriend has an iPhone. And the other friends that have an iPhone they text me and it goes to iMessage.
I know. I hate this. And you're a green bubble.
Right. Well, you know what it is? I don't even get them.
Yeah.
Okay,
I can help you with that. You must have had an iPhone at some point, right?
Well, you know what it is? I have an iPhone 6 Plus.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I kind of like, I'm not the master tech guy like you, but I switch in and out. Like, let's say, well,
yeah, so the same thing happens to me. So Apple keeps track of this in the context, but I think that even beyond that, they keep track of this. If you're an iPhone user, when somebody, even if you don't use it all the time, when somebody sends you a text message, it will go to messages, which means you won't be able to read it on your Android phone. It does not go to an SMS phone number.
Right.
There's a couple of things to do. The first thing to do is get your girlfriend to change her contacts and don't have an iPhone number in there for you.
I tried that, but then do I have to clear the recents out from the text message itself?
No. Then the next thing is Apple actually has made a page for people who want to opt out of messages. And it's really for those of us who were iPhone users and went to Android. So you can deregister and turn off iMessage. Now, you have a problem, and I have the same problem, because you still want to use an iPhone.
Exactly.
And this is why I find it very annoying that Apple has created a messaging system that isn't truly cross-platform. So if you go, and I'll put this, just search Google Apple deregister iMessage, and you'll get this page, and it gives you instructions. You can actually enter your phone number, press a button. It'll send a confirmation code. When you enter that code, then you will no longer get iMessages. When your girlfriend or anybody uses iMessages to send you a message, it will go as a text message.
Okay, so, and then let's say I switch back to the iPhone.
Then you're
switching. It'll be green again?
You're going to stay green for the rest of your life. There's a first stage. If it says, if you still have your iPhone, follow the steps below to turn off iMessage. And it involves, by the way, going not only to messages, but FaceTime. Apple, this is not a good solution. I don't know if you have heard me talk about Telegram. This is around the world, people don't use SMS. They message each other using internet-based messaging apps like WhatsApp. That's why WhatsApp sold to Facebook for $22 million. I think it's even more now. I think it went up because the stock went up. So they don't use SMS because it costs money in many countries to send a text message. They prefer these internet-based, data-based messengers, which messages is, but sort of. If Apple thinks you're on an iPhone, then it'll use data. But if Apple doesn't know, it says, oh, he's not an iPhone user, then it'll send it as a text message. That's kind of what you want when you're on your Android device, because there is no messages for Android. Apple should make a messages for Android, if you ask me, but they haven't. If you can convince your girlfriend to use a messaging app, then all will be golden. You will be part of the world. You'll no longer be one of those green bubble guys. You'll be an equal. And I love Telegram. I've been using Telegram. Your girlfriend will like it too because it has stickers. You can send each other cute stickers. There's tons of stickers. It allows group messaging. It allows totally secret chat too, which is nice. Even the folks at Telegram, if you use the secret chat feature, even the folks at Telegram can't see your messaging. Some people like to know that. You know, you figure if you're using WhatsApp, well, Facebook's seeing everything. I really like Telegram. It has a lot of other features, including the ability to create bots, mechanical Telegram users that do things automatically. There's one to send you graphics, the image bot. I have a bot. I have the Chief Twit bot. That's my mechanical Leo that tells you when there's a new podcast or when I've gone on the air, things like that. So I would see if you can convince your family or friends to move to another messaging platform. A lot of people use Facebook Messenger. And then you'll all be equal. Unfortunately, Apple has no desire to make Android users equal. In the Apple world, you will never be equal because you use the other guy. I think that's shameful, frankly. Okay, so that's the way to do it. Google deregister, deregister iMessage, and you'll find this Apple page. They had to make this page because people were just so upset about all of this. I've told a lot of people about Telegram. A lot of people are using it. There's some question about how secure it is. I wouldn't worry about security particularly. If you're a Russian spy, use something else. But if you're a normal person, it's sufficiently secure. And I like it. It's a fun platform. If only I could get my kids and my I got my wife using it. If I only get my kids to use it, that's the problem with all of these messages. Everybody's using something else. Most of us have a folder full of messaging apps because Joey uses Facebook Messenger. Sally uses WhatsApp. Jimmy uses Telegram. Harry uses GroupMe. They're all different ones. I wish we had... just could all agree on WeChat or Line or something. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. Somebody in the chat room says, Casper's why Leo is so laid back today. Yes, I'm relaxed. 8888-ASK-LEO. Actually, you know what? I've been using these meditation programs that there's lots of apps out there like Calm, C-A-L-M, calm.com. There's one called Headspace I've been using. They're very relaxing. You put on the headphones, your phone has, and they walk you through a meditation. A little feel. I'll walk you through a guided meditation of geekitude next hour as we continue. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, nerd. Why is it downloading Candy Crush Saga? I did not ask it for Candy Crush Saga. That is not cool. Not cool. Look at that. This is just 48 megabytes. That's not... I don't care about that. I'm going to cancel that. No Candy Crush Saga. No. No. So, I did get a scary error message on the beat... on the beat up. The boot up. I do feel a little beat up. But it hasn't given me blue screen. And it is the latest version, so... I think we're all right. We need to run a quick update. No updates. Okay, that's good. So this is including the hotfix threshold 2 I got. I don't know what happened. It must have just been a bad install. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and all that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from everywhere in the U.S. and Canada, because we are all over the U.S. But if you're outside that area, you can always call via Skype, 888-827-5536. Toll-free. Sonia is next from Riverside, California. Hi, Sonia. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, glad to hear from you.
Glad you called.
I tear my hair out one hair at a time.
Oh, no, that sounds painful.
It is, believe me. I recently downloaded 10 to my HP laptop, and I have a Canon MP240, and I no longer can run copies of my email.
You like to print it out after you get it?
Sometimes.
So can you print anything?
Yes, I can.
Oh.
So it just seems to be involved with my Yahoo Mail.
You could print from any other program, but not your web browser.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's not what you hope to hear, I'm sure.
Local computer store. I don't know.
I don't know. That doesn't sound right. So the first thing to do is, as you're in your browser and you first of all, let me ask you how you print from your browser. Do you use the Yahoo print command, or do you go to the menu and print from there?
Oh, Yahoo Mail. That's my home page that pops up.
Yeah. And then on the page, as you read messages and stuff, there's a little printer icon on Yahoo Mail.
No.
No.
Or.
You go to the printer command in the menu.
Yeah, under the top of the, right at the top of the page, it has delete, move, spam, and more.
Yeah, now that's the Yahoo menu. So, a couple of things I would do to see if this will fix it. Microsoft, when it shipped Windows 10, shipped it with two browsers, just to make it even more fun. They have this new Edge browser, and of course it's a little confusing because if you look in the toolbar, That blue E looks just like the Internet Explorer E, but it's not. It's Edge.
Okay.
So the Edge browser got shipped, I think, a little bit prematurely. It came out, Microsoft, I think, was rushing Windows 10 for the school, back-to-school market. And because they had said for, you know, at least a year, Windows 10 will come out in the fall of 2015. Now, they have a big update coming out in October. They call it Threshold 2. That's the internal code name for it. Threshold is the code name for Windows 10. So Threshold 2, if you sounds like the next version of Windows 10, in that they're going to increase the capability, really improve the capabilities of Edge. But until then, Edge is kind of a limited browser, frankly, and I think you may be having an Edge issue. So there's a couple of choices. Are you using Edge?
No, I don't think so.
Drat. What are you using? Are you just using whatever pops up?
Yeah.
Because that's Edge.
Okay.
So you wouldn't know. I mean, it doesn't announce itself, hey, I'm Edge. It just, it is, though.
Okay,
so they still include Internet Explorer for this reason. They wanted to get rid of it. But if you go to your, you click that start menu and you type Internet Explorer, you'll see Internet Explorer is there. It's not gone. It's just, it's, so you can see, in fact, if you type Internet, you'll see both in the menu, the Microsoft Edge, Microsoft's recommended browser, and Internet Explorer, the browser that works. So the first thing I'd try is not using Edge and see if you can print without Edge. So either run Internet Explorer, you already have that.
Yeah.
And you know that you can, once you're in the start menu, just start typing, and whatever you type, it'll find. So you could just start typing Internet, and it'll see Internet Explorer.
Okay.
That way you don't have to search through the menu and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing you could do is you could download a different browser. I really like Google's Chrome browser. It's free from google.com/Chrome.
There's somewhere.
Yeah.
I do.
You do use that.
I have Chrome.
Well,
it isn't the one that uses it most of the time. I think it's the Explorer.
Yeah. Well, it was Explorer until you got to Windows 10, and then they swapped in Edge without telling anybody. So my first thing would be just try it with a different browser. It may be that Edge just doesn't have, because when you do it from the Yahoo menu, which you're doing, you're actually invoking a JavaScript, a little bit of programming that says, okay, now call the computer's printing command and all that. And I bet you that's where it's falling apart.
Okay. Well, that's some things to try. That's
try that.
Anybody else has given me, Leo.
Well, it's just, it's kind of an educated guess. I'm looking, I don't see Edge, that Edge actually has a print command. Oh, yeah, it does. Okay. So if you're on Yahoo Mail, on the far right of the browser, there's three dots.
On
the window, there's three dots. If you click that, you'll see some commands, including a print command, which is, by the way, grayed out on mine, which means to me, I can't print. I'm thinking I had a good guess. Maybe Edge doesn't print. That seems like a dumb thing, doesn't it?
Now, when I just did that, and I get this screen that's half black and it shows my email that I want. And this is where I got once before, but I can find no place on there that says print.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say try Internet Explorer. It'll first of all, it'll look more like you're used to.
Okay.
And I bet it'll work more. Actually, let me go to my Yahoo Mail just to see. Cuz I should try this, you know. If this is my theory, I'm going to try my theory here.
Okay.
see if my theory is correct. Yeah, the print command does light up there, so I should be. Oh, and I get that black screen you're talking about. Now, the first thing to look at is, what does the printer say? Does it show your printer?
Let me go back to it.
If you get that black screen, that's the print screen.
Yeah.
And on the left, there's a series of boxes, one of which is the top most is which printer to use. Make sure your printer is selected there. If you don't see your HP printer, then you might want to add that printer. You might have to reinstall the printer driver.
That OneNote, I was afraid to go in there. Okay, I see my printer.
Yeah.
Maybe the problem.
Select
right?
It now. Try printing. Yeah.
All right. Now, of course, there's no place to get print on that page.
I know. I don't see it either. Where do they?
So
come on, Microsoft, can't be this hard. Wait a minute, I don't see a print button either.
No.
What is going on here? Maybe just hit return. Does that work? No, no. What the heck? Let's get rid of Edge. That's the first thing I'm going to do. That's crazy. I didn't see a print button either.
No, there isn't.
Somebody said there's on the top there, but I didn't see it.
But you can hit that, nothing happens.
So that was the first problem, by the way, which is that you didn't have it set to a printer. It was sent to OneNote.
Yeah, yeah. But still, there's no place to go.
Oh, there's got to be somewhere in there. They got to have a print button. It's always fun with Microsoft. You know, the truth is, this is such a brand new version of Windows that you and I both are struggling a little bit with it, especially because Edge is not a full-fledged browser. It's kind of a work in progress. Try Internet Explorer. Everything will look familiar, and it should work just fine.
Well, Leo, and thank you very much.
It's at the very bottom, but I guess it's blocked on my page, but there should be a print and cancel button at the very bottom of that window. Thank you for calling. I'm sorry. You know, I talked about this on the last show. How do we survive? Technology just is, it's the problem is this stuff is all designed by people who are like fish. They're immersed in the ocean of technology. They're engineers. They wrote the stuff. They know, the print is right there. You just do the frame, it's in the thing, and it's going to print. Because they live in it. They don't understand that if you're not an engineer, if you're not immersed in this, that it's baffling. We need to get some normal people designing this stuff. At least giving them some information to the engineers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you'd like to talk high tech, I'd like to talk high tech with you. 888-827-5536. Tom is in Ohio. Hello, Tom.
Oh, yes, from the wonderful state of Ohio. We're
yes,
round
sir.
On the ends and high in the middle. And that's literally and figuratively because we got issue 3 on the ballot to legalize marijuana.
Oh, so you will be high in the middle and maybe on the ends too.
Wow. Yeah, it might be all the way around.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's for medical and I think there's a little bit of recreational use in there. But
Do you have the votes coming up in November?
Yeah, it'll be coming up at this next election. They gave it an issue number. I think it's issue 3.
Yeah.
They got enough signatures and it's, finally, I remember 40 years ago in high school, people talking about legalizing marijuana.
Yeah, man. Someday, man, you'll be able to go in a drugstore, man, and you just buy a joint. It'll be so cool. So cool. Yeah, I remember that in high school, too.
They must be basking in their glory now. All right.
Dude.
Yeah, I'm with you on that hate to answer the phone bit, you know.
Isn't that funny? What a change. I saw a New York, I think it was a New Yorker cartoon about the good old days where the phone would ring, you know, that black phone with the round dial in the living room.
It's a light phone that we used to have.
Yeah, and everybody come running. Is it for me? Is it for me? Now it's like, get it out of here. Unplug it.
Yeah, it's like the plague.
Yeah, it's the plague. Because you know why? Because it's rarely anybody you want to talk to.
Exactly. And I keep telling my wife, she says, she doesn't need glasses. And I said, look at the caller ID.
I think the caller ID. What are you talking about? No, I think the text messaging has really replaced phone calls.
Yeah. And my wife, she doesn't want to text, though. She's averse to text.
She's what we call old school.
Yeah. Oh, very old school.
Yeah.
I think she used a computer once in her life. Well, yeah. I got her a Chromebook. I took your advice.
Oh, good. How does she like it?
Online. She still struggles to try to get passwords and logins.
Yeah.
But she has some online learning for her workplace, and they have them doing online, seminars and that.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. That's
that.
Good.
It worked great for that. And it's
but just some people, I still think there's, it's, I don't know if it's a gene. It's not gender. I'm not going to say that, but there are some people.
They're just averse of technology.
They don't want it. They don't get it. They look at it. Mm-hmm. It's baffling. And then there's some people who, I'm one of them, they're geeks who we love it.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get enough of it.
Yep. I got my garage door sends a message to my phone. Hey, I'm still open.
You're a geek. You're a geek. Okay. You qualified.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I tried an app. It was called True Caller or something like that.
Yeah, I was just talking about that, actually, in between on the commercial. True Caller.
Yeah, and it was supposedly going to, you know, identify you if you got a bogus or spam. But I think the only way it does anything is if you identify the call as being a spam, and then you hit block on there.
Well, it's crowdsourced. So this is kind of how Gmail has done such a good job, Google's email solution, of getting rid of spam, is by letting people, because the best way to tell if it's spam is not computer through some sort of sieve or filter, but just humans. Humans are so much better at recognizing spam from real stuff. So the way Gmail works is people mark stuff as spam if they get spam, and enough people send Google that signal that that message is spam, they just start blocking it. Truecaller, same theory. Not enough people are using it yet, maybe, but it's crowdsourced. Yeah. So when I get a phone call and I use it, it's a free program, although they have a premium version. When I use it, it will say, was that a spam call or was that a real? And you can indicate it. And sometimes my phone will ring and it says, 95 people say this is a spam call.
Right.
And there's even a setting that says, if people say it's a spam call, don't let it go through, hang up on them. So I like the idea. It is free to try. You don't get a whole lot more for buying it. You get a badge. But
they're even so far as if you don't answer the call, then they leave a stupid recorded message.
I like that. I like that. They also have a true dialer. I don't know who these guys are, and I'm not really sure what's going on. Certainly, if you're worried about privacy, you might think twice about installing this program because you are giving it access to all of your contacts.
Yeah, they're probably the same guys from the Windows company.
They might be. I've been using this for a while. I go back and forth on it. You know, Facebook has a similar program. And it's the same idea. And, of course, because it's Facebook, you know you're giving them information. That's what they get. That's what they want. They want more information about you. But Facebook then will also keep your contact list up to date from their Facebook contacts, things like that. There's another one called, the chat room's telling me, Mr. Number. The problem is that caller ID doesn't work. Caller ID doesn't work because you can spoof caller ID easily. There's a lot. It's a simple thing to do. Doesn't have to take any skill. So the number that you're seeing may not be real. Caller ID also often is blocked. When I see an unknown number. Yeah.
That's what a lot of them come in at. It says unknown.
And yet.
That's what bugs me is that they're from legitimate.
That's the problem. My doctor uses an unknown number.
My insurance company calls and I don't answer it. And then I never talked to the girl but one time.
Right.
The adjuster that I had earlier this year, and it always came in unknown.
I know.
Driving me nuts.
It's a broken system, and that's why so many of us just say text me or email me because I guess leave me a message. If you're legit and you call, leave me a message. But you know what I notice? Very few of the calls I don't take leave a message. So that tells me most of them are bogus.
Yeah, most of them are. That's exactly what I do. But I just still get annoyed because some of those spam calls, they leave a message and says, you know, call back right now about something or other, you know.
We're getting ready, and you especially in Ohio, because you're a very important state in the next presidential election.
I bet
you get robocalls.
One of the candidates over here at Case Western Reserve earlier this week.
Nice. Yeah. So the thing is, you're going to start getting robocalls because that's all the campaigns use them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. You forget every 4 years. We live in California, so our vote doesn't matter, apparently. Thank you, Electoral College, for making us all care. But in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, in Florida, in those swing states, I can only imagine what a zoo it becomes. And, of course, the campaign season begins earlier and earlier. We've already had a presidential debate. The election's more than a year away. The primaries are months away. It's crazy. More and more people are using cell phones, which means you've got a nice display on there with caller ID. I think there are better and better solutions. I have to look into these Truecaller guys. I have no reason not to trust them, and in fact, I use it. I'd love to hear from you, though, if there's a better solution. Is Mr. Number better? What do you use? And I'll do some research, too, and we'll figure out what's the best way to screen calls before you get it. Google Voice is, of course, great. I've used that for years. 8888-ASK-LEO. You certainly should put yourself on the Do Not Call registry. Then legitimate spam calls won't call you, if there is such a thing. You can call me. I answer your calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No, Borgnine, but that's the problem. My doctor calls from a blocked number. Don't you want to hear from your doctor? Mr. Laporte, you really need to call me. We've got the results of your tests, and I just don't want to tell you over the phone. You must call me. So I'm not going to call him. I don't want to know. White Pages caller ID and block, is that a better one? Call control. We should make a list of these. James, I hope you're writing these all down. And what's the best one? I know, Dr. Mom, so stop trying to call me. I don't know. Actually, there's some issues with sharing your contact list because you're not just sharing your personal information. You are now sharing the personal information of all the people you know. And I have some pretty important people's phone numbers in my contact list. And I know for a fact they wouldn't want me to share those. You can leave a message saying, this is your doctor, please call me. Surely you can do that, Dr. Mom. She says, HIPAA prevents you from leaving a message, but that would be a message containing content, right? Like, I'm sorry, Leo, you're about to die. I know, I'm teasing you, Dr. Mom. Dr. Mom has never called me. The only time I called her, she fell asleep. Oh, yeah, I don't even answer my phone. I never answer my phone. Because my phone number has gotten out so many times now that, you know, everybody who watches Twit knows my phone number, so. In fact, it's got to the point where I don't even try to hide it. It's in my email signature. So, I don't know why I put it in my email signature. Frankly, I don't answer it. But I figured that way you can leave me a message, right? So I do listen to my messages. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, ready to perform surgery on your personal confuser. Tom in Houston's next. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Leo. Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you? Oh, good.
First-time caller.
Yay.
Well, I have a question, and I'd like your thoughts on a place I can go, a resource to find about home networking. You know, I'm trying to set up the PS Sense box in the house, and I'm befuddled with the, you know, the 5-dot, the 10-dot, the 192-dot, the default gateway, the
sub. Oh, it's crazy. Well, you know what's interesting? I mean, this used to be the province of the IT guy, right? I mean, this was high voodoo, high computer technology voodoo. But now that we all have multiple computers and high-speed internet, we all have routers in our house all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Now we have local area networks, and we have to learn all this obscure arcana that's associated with networking. So I generally send people to a site called Practically Networked. It's practicallynetworked.com. They have product reviews, but they also have tutorials in which a lot of these terms are defined. The tutorials are great because, you know, they cover every area that you would, you know, how to share a printer on a network, how to turn your PC into a router, networking utilities that are free and useful, and things like that. It's a great site. Originally, I think, designed for Linksys owners. It now covers everything. And it seems to be they've kept it up to date, as far as I can tell. They've done a nice job. So,
yeah. Oh, that's excellent. Because Everything I've been looking at, it looks like it's a full-blown college course. I'm like,
yeah, it kind of is, but this is as close to a consumer version of this as possible. But it's inevitable that you're going to get a little geeky. Look at the backgrounders. I'd start there. Understanding VoIP, data formats, wireless networking, sharing files on the internet, hardware, routers. These will give you kind of a quick education in all of this stuff. I like it.
That's fun.
Yeah, and if anybody has another one, somebody in the chat room says, Dexter says, smallnetbuilder.com is a good one, too. Smallnetbuilder. We should really, in fact, let's do this. put together a directory on the website, techguylabs.com, with all of the different sites that people in the chat room recommend. There's some excellent sites out there. What you don't want, of course, is to go to one that is created by a particular vendor. You'd like to have one that's independent. And both of those sites, practicallynetworked.com and smallnetbuilder.com, they're independent sites.
Oh, I appreciate you, Leo.
Good luck.
Oh, thanks so much.
Good luck. It's not fun. Rick, Arkansas, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm well, Rick. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a first-time caller, and I've been listening to your show for the last few weeks. I'm not real hot-takey, but I got a question. I'm going to semi-retire, and I'm going to be traveling around the lower 47 because
so
I'm
jealous.
Not planning on going to California. I'm not planning on doing that. But anyway,
that's because all the fruits and nuts are over here. I know. It's like granola. I know.
But what I'm going to do is I have a YouTube channel, and I have to download videos. And you've got these places like Walmart and McDonald's and Starbucks and everything that have free Wi-Fi. But it's kind of hard to park a big rig in a Starbucks. And I can actually pick RV parks that are pretty close to these locations, but I want to try to reach out and pick up their signal so that I can download my videos that I do on YouTube.
Yeah. So, first of all, of course, you want to be respectful of them and not eat up all their bandwidth.
Yes.
It's nice if you're a customer before you use all their bandwidth. But open Wi-Fi access spots are great. You can get, and I've seen people use extenders, better antennas, in effect, for your Wi-Fi. They make them with magnetic mounts suitable for trucks or RVs. The idea being you don't have it out all the time, but when you get somewhere you want Wi-Fi, you take this antenna and you put it right on the roof there, and you're going to get a better signal than anything inside the vehicle.
Yes. Well, see, also, too, a lot of these RV parks now are, like, really huge RV parks, and their Wi-Fi is not as strong as, like, Walmart, see? And you don't know where you're going to be parked at, and you may be all the way across from their antenna, and I want to be able to reach out and get that. But I've been looking at them. Some of them are fairly expensive. I'd really like to mount it and have it stay there. But, I've got a really good base to mount to here. I've got a 32-foot fifth wheel.
I'm gonna send you to a good friend of mine, Bob Crane, C. Crane Radio. They make something called the Country Mile Wi-Fi. And they say specifically, improve RV park Wi-Fi. And they have a whole thing about how to do this. They sell a variety of antennas, some fixed, not just magnetic, some that you can actually attach to the outside of the vehicle. There's omnidirectional and there's directional. If you get somewhere and you know where the Wi-Fi access point is, you certainly want to use a directional antenna. That'll give you a better reception.
That's what we got on the digital television. It's directional, and you can kind of point it in that direction.
Yeah, so C. Crane sells a lot of these solutions. They're a great catalog. But they've made a site just for this, countrymilewifi.com.
Countrymilewifi.
It's specific, and it's a kind of nicely named, isn't it?
If you're from Arkansas and you live in a town of 3,000 people.
It's pretty much right, isn't it? Sounds like a Dolly Parton song. I had Country Mile Wi-Fi. So that I would take a look at. Look, there it is. There's, for instance, an RV with a big old antenna on the side. There's lots of ways to do this, and that's a great solution. A lot of people who do travel the country doing this, and it's always been a dream of mine to retire and do this exact thing. We'll use 3G and 4G cellular networks because those you can get almost anywhere. Buy a MiFi card. I just got one. I haven't received it yet, but it's kind of an intriguing idea. It's called the Karma, K-A-R-M-A, Go. And not an advertiser. They were a Kickstarter campaign. They're at yourkarma.com. And the idea is, now it uses Sprint, which could be a liability. Sprint's coverage isn't the greatest. If you know where you're going and you know that T-Mobile or Verizon or AT&T will be better, generally AT&T's the best, go to AT&T and get one of these devices. The thing I like about the Karma Go is you pay as you go. So it's a little more expensive, but it's $15 per gigabyte, but you only pay for the gigabytes you use. So if most of the time in your RV you're getting Wi-Fi from the local RV park, you don't need to use this, fine. You won't be paying for it until you do need to use it. First gigabyte's $14. You get 5 gigabytes for $59, 10 for $99. You buy them, and you buy a bunch, but they don't expire. And you know, you use it when you need it. I've ordered one of these. The only drawback, as far as I can tell, is I think they're still Sprint only. So that could be a negative. But that is the website for that is YourKarma.com. But I would definitely do the Country Mile thing, because that's going to give you free Wi-Fi in most places. Again, be thoughtful, be kind. Don't suck down all the bandwidth at the RV park just because you've got the biggest antenna. Share. Freedom Pop also has a similar solution. I haven't tried that either. 8888 to the Karma Go. 8888 Ask Leo. The final segment of the show is coming up. I think I have a couple three callers I can handle. Let's get to it in just a moment. Don't forget, I do mention from time to time the website. That's a really useful resource where we compile things that we talk about, so you don't have to write links down. I know you're scribbling furiously. Just remember this. You don't have to write it down. TechGuyLabs.com. Everything will be there, and it's free. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, performing computer surgery each and every week at this same time in the same station. Josie is on the line from New Mexico. Hi, Josie.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. It's a beautiful day here in New Mexico.
Isn't every day a beautiful day in New Mexico?
Mostly, yes.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much. I've got an iPad, and I'm kind of using that as my computer. And I want to know what's the best way for backing up the information on it. I've got a lot of books, from Amazon.
Right.
I purchase them, and you can get them and all that stuff. But photos and all that stuff, I'm kind of worried.
So there's two ways to do it.
Yeah.
There's the fast, free, and easy way, and there's the convenient but a little bit pricey way. So the fast, free, and easy way is to connect it to a computer that has iTunes on it. And iTunes will back up your stuff for you.
Okay, everything.
Everything, and it'll keep it there. In fact, it will back up several versions. So you can, if you, for instance, lost your iPad, you connected a new one, the very first thing it would say is, well, would you like to restore from your previous iPad? And you can even choose which date's backup to restore from. And that would include pictures, music, books, anything you purchased, plus all your settings. It actually puts it back to the way it was.
My problem is I don't have access to a PC right now.
Okay, so if you don't have a computer, there's another way to do it, and that is with iCloud backup. And you've probably seen this in the settings on your iPad. If you turn that on, now the problem is iPad backup is only free for the first 5 gigabytes. How big is your iPad?
It's a 32, and I've used about six gigabytes are somewhere. I have no idea, but
yeah, that's on iCloud, and you can actually same thing. If you got a new iPad, you would in the setup process and say, "Hey, I see you have a backup in the iCloud. Would you like to restore that?" Now it's slow because it's uploading and downloading. It's not.
Yeah,
but
I've got about 17.3 gigabytes used.
Yeah. So you'd probably have to buy a little bit more iCloud drive storage. It's not free, but it's not super expensive. I'm trying to remember what the pricing is, but if you look on the iPad, it actually gives you the option to buy more, and it'll tell you how much it's going to cost.
And I was thinking that might be the best solution.
Oh, yeah.
But you advertise the iDrive, but that's too much for what I need.
Yeah.
Is it the iDrive that you...
I don't know. That's your local radio station, probably. It's not something I know about.
No, I think if you advertise some backup, not for...
Carbonite. iDrive, you're talking about Carbonite.
No, Carbonite, we have Carbonite on the PCs. At this point, I'm not...
Yeah, there's no Carbonite for the iPad unless you back up the iPad to the PC, and then it'll back that up.
Yeah.
So you want... So, I think iCloud... Basically, iCloud backup is Carbonite for the iPad, basically.
Okay, and that's the best solution.
Those are the two. That's it. Those are your two solutions. You might be right. There may be somebody that sells something. Maybe it's called the iDrive. I don't remember.
You advertise a backup or something other than Carbonite sometimes? Or maybe it is your local. Maybe it's my local.
It's not me. It's the local station. I don't control those advertisements. I don't even know what they are. Okay. I'm sure it's fine. I'm not knocking it. I'm sure but it I just is. I can't tell you what the name is because your station never called me and said, "Hey, Leo."
Well, yes, and actually I'm listening on KYI.
Oh, actually. Good. Well, hello, KYI. Yeah. Good station. So there are other ways to do kind of more manual backup, like OneDrive from Microsoft. You can put that on there. In fact, I would look at that. If you have a Microsoft Office subscription, that's a great deal. OneDrive is unlimited free backup if you pay the $8 or more a month to have a Microsoft Office subscription. So that's an easy thing to turn on. You put that on your iPad, and it'll back up photos, documents. It won't probably back up the audiobooks you've purchased. That's the problem. OneDrive and other third-party solutions, non-Apple solutions, can't access every part of the iPad. The only thing that can access every part of the iPad is Apple. There may be a hardware solution that I'm not aware of. I seem to remember at various conferences seeing drives you could plug into the – tell me if I'm wrong, chat room, that you could plug into the airport – I'm sorry, the port on the iPad, the Lightning port, and it would copy – can it copy data off of it that way? Maybe you can. In my opinion, there's really two ways. There's direct to a computer using iTunes, and there's OneCloud – or iCloud drive. Not cheap. But, you know, certainly convenient. I'm just looking to see what the prices. Apple is not very forthcoming with these. We made a table, actually. It's kind of cool. We made a table of costs per year, per terabyte. I should put this in our show notes. This was really useful. We did it yesterday on our new Screensavers show because somebody called with a similar question. Cost per year, per terabyte of data. Let me see if I can find that. Yeah, here it is. And because it's not easy to gather all that information together. So Amazon's Cloud Drive, they offer a free for your Prime members, free photo backup. But if you want unlimited of everything, that's $59.99. Let's say $60 a year for a terabyte. Carbonite, $50, $48 a year for unlimited. But that requires a computer. Microsoft OneDrive, $83.88 for a terabyte per year. Dropbox, $99 a year. Google Drive, $120 per year. Box.net, $150 per year. The most expensive, Apple's, $20 a month. $240 a year. So it is the most expensive storage. Storage prices are starting to drop a lot because of all the competition. But nowhere is it easy to figure out how much a terabyte a year is going to cost. So it's worth checking. These prices, you know, are renewable. Every month or every year you have to pay. Apple charges you every month $20 for a terabyte of storage. And you know, it's easy to go through a terabyte. I would say terabyte actually is probably as much as anybody needs. But the advantage of using the iCloud solution is it's easy. It works on your iPad transparently. Got about a minute left for Doug in L.A. Hey, Doug, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, hey, I've been listening to you on KFI since your earliest days. It's great to finally talk to you.
More than 10 years on the great 50,000-watt blowtorch of Southern California, KFI.
Absolutely, and you make it that much greater, brother.
Thank you.
So I just got a Sony A6000.
Nice. Camera.
And our man Elliot should look at that one as well. By the way,
how much was that?
$7,000. It was $700 with the kit lens because the A7000 is just about to come out.
Ah,
and the only thing
deal.
It does better is 4K video, which most people don't need. So, and I know we're short on time, so I'm kind of rushing.
I love these Sony cameras. You know, I shoot an A7. I think they are. I gave my son a 6000 for high school graduation. Highly recommend.
It's an amazing camera.
Yeah.
And it shoots amazing video, which is my question. So the AVHCD format, which is the best format that it saves natively,
yep,
is new to me. And it comes in a package. So I shot.
It's a very standard. It's a very standard format. It's MPEG-4, but you're right. There are multiple files. If you import it with any video editing program, and they'll all read it, You can save them out as a single MPEG-4 file. It is a without reconverting it. It's a standard format. AVCHD is everywhere. You can use Handbrake. We mentioned that before, a free program to convert it to any other format. Handbrake.fr, that's free. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.